corpus, which protects people from unlawful detentions. This is what he said.
Well, the Constitution is clear, and that, of course, is the supreme law of the land, that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in a time of invasion. So I would say that's an option we're actively looking at. Look, a lot of it depends on whether the courts do the right thing or not. At the end of the day, Congress passed a body of law known as the Immigration Nationality Act, which stripped Article 3 courts, that's the judicial branch of jurisdiction over immigration cases. So Congress actually passed, it's called jurisdiction stripping legislation. It passed a number of laws that say that the Article 3 courts aren't even allowed to be involved in immigration cases.
So if you finally can respond just hours before you were arrested to Stephen Miller saying they're weighing stripping habeas corpus, they're weighing doing away with it because while it may not be wartime, we're in the midst of an invasion.
This is completely insane, and it's a scary moment in the history of this country as we watch democracy slip between our fingers. I think that because Trump was elected and there's still a process, we still have this separation of powers, that people believe that the separation of powers is going to fix this. This is not being fixed. People are watching this take place as authoritarianism becomes the rule of the land here in this country. And we need more voices and more people to stand up against this. Suspending habeas corpus is something that happens in a time of war. To relate this to war is definitely scary. It means that we're in an existential threat here, and we need to stand up and do something about this immediately.
When do you have to go to court?
May 15th, go back to court for my preliminary hearing, in the city of Newark, and hopefully the supporters will be out there supporting me.
Soon afterwards, there's the primary for governor. Is that right? June 10th?
Yes, June 10th. Absolutely.
Yeah. Ross Baraka, I want to thank you for being with us. Mayor of Newark, New Jersey, the largest city in New Jersey. Yes, a Democratic candidate for governor in the state's gubernatorial election this year. On Friday, the mayor was arrested by 20 armed, many masked federal agents standing on public property in his city of Newark. He was released after 5 hours. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we've reported, on Friday, these agents arrested the mayor of Newark, Ross Baraka, on trespassing charges after he joined a congressional delegation to inspect a privately run immigration jail in Newark. The Department of Homeland Security has also threatened to arrest the three Democratic lawmakers who visited the ICE jail, LaMonica McIver, Rob Menendez, and Bonnie Watson Coleman. They accuse them of assaulting ICE officers. This is DHS spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin on CNN Saturday.
There will likely be more arrests coming. We actually have body camera footage of some of these members of Congress assaulting our ICE enforcement officers, including body slamming a female ICE officer. So we will be showing that to viewers very shortly.
You say a video of members of Congress body slamming ICE?
That's correct.
Officials?
That's correct, sir. It's disgusting.
Okay, and so if you have that video, are you suggesting that members of Congress will be arrested who were there yesterday?
This is an ongoing investigation, and that is definitely on the table.
Those arrests could apparently come at any time. Congressmember Bonnie Watson Coleman denied McLaughlin's allegations, writing, "The notion that I or any of my colleagues body slammed armed federal officers is absurd. DHS is lying because they know their agents were out of line," she wrote. Meanwhile, Congressmember Rob Menendez issued a statement, quote, "As members of Congress, we have a legal right to conduct oversight at any DHS facility without prior notice, as we have already done twice this year. Throughout every step of this visit, ICE attempted to intimidate everyone involved and impede our ability to conduct oversight. This is like nothing I've ever seen before, and I'm shocked and disturbed that something like this happened in our community," Menendez said. For more, we are joined by Democratic New Jersey Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman. Coleman is an 80-year-old cancer survivor. She was out on Friday along with fellow Congress members MacIver and Menendez. And when Mayor Baraka was being arrested, they were trying to shield him. New Jersey Congresswoman Bonnie Watson-Coleman, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can respond to what the DHS spokesperson said, calling your actions, the actions of the delegation, disgusting.
Thank you very much for having me. We were there for reasons that are permitted under law to conduct this inspection or oversight inspection of the facility. We were delayed and delayed and delayed, and there was one excuse after another. Finally, everyone showed up from the Newark offices of ICE. We thought now we were going to start the tour. That didn't happen. We went outside because we understood the mayor was there and these ICE officials were going down to meet him. We were there when they asked him to leave. He turned around, walked away, walked behind the gates, and went on public property. We thought now we were going to proceed to go to do our tour. We saw ICE members huddling together on the phone. And the next thing we heard was, we're going to arrest the mayor. We're going to lock him up. And we asked, well, why? He's on public property. You asked him to leave, he left. There was no issue with his leaving. And so when they opened the gate, they rushed upon him with several officers, maybe 20 or so. And LaMonica and Rob and I tried to shield the mayor. We tried to stand between them and the mayor, hoping that this thing would not escalate. At the same time, we were saying, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? He hasn't done anything. And then you saw the chaos after that.
You know, it's interesting. They said, Department of Homeland Security, they're releasing the footage. They released it. They said it would show the body slamming. We don't see any such thing in the video they released. You're now calling for the full video to be released?
Looking for the full video to be released, and anyone else that was filming from their own personal cameras and other cameras while we were there, there was no body slamming. The Department of Homeland Security or the representatives from the administration are doing what they do consistently, and that is to lie and to deflect and to try to create legitimacy for illegitimate things that they are doing. And so we need people to see this. This is a very scary moment in our governance and our towns across the nation, and we're very concerned about other folks just trying to go about their lives and being accosted and being held and being disappearing under this administration. This is very un-American, and this is just very scary.
Now, Congressmember Bonnie Watson-Coleman, you actually got to tour the facility after Baraka was arrested. Number one, I was wondering if you saw him in a cell. But number two, can you tell us what you and Menendez and MacIver, the three of you, saw inside?
So we toured the facilities. We toured the area where they were holding people, the area where you would eat, the area where you cook, some of the bathroom facilities, the medical area. The place is not as clean as it could be, but relatively so. They're staffing up now, and they're waiting for ICE to approve the new individuals to come in. So there were things like dirt balls on the floor. We went into the elevator to go up to the second floor. We had a hard time getting on the elevator with the person who's the director of the facility. When we wanted to leave the second floor, we got onto the elevator and the elevator wouldn't move. So one of the complaints and concerns, the safety and security of the elevators, and that's one of the issues that's been under inspection. But we did conduct it. We talked to several of the women who were there. There were five women, I believe, all of whom were confused. They hadn't had a chance to talk to their lawyers or their families. They didn't know what was going to happen next. They were being fed. They were not being treated poorly by the staff, but the staff was minimal in the facility. But clearly, These were women from Honduras, Venezuela, and another place that I can't remember, who were just really concerned about what was going to happen to them next.
New Jersey Congressmember Bonnie Watson-Coleman, you are 80 years old. You're a cancer survivor. You publicly talked about what that battle was all about. And the last video that you just put out is about what's happening today in Congress. It's about the Republican leadership attempting to cut something like $800 billion from Medicaid. I'm wondering if you can comment on what's taking place now in Congress.
Well, we're going to have a series of hearings this week, actually, on the president's so-called skinny budget. But there is $880 billion in directions to cut out of energy and commerce. And 75% of that money goes to Medicaid, that goes to the states to take care of people who are in nursing homes, have disabilities, need health care in some form or another, and meet certain other socioeconomic eligibilities. It also covers children, the Children's Health Care Program. If you're going to cut $880 billion out of a budget, when 75% of that budget goes to that purpose, then you're going to end up cutting life-saving Medicaid help to those who are in nursing homes, to the elderly, to the disabled, et cetera. And Republicans keep lying to us about, or lying to the country, because they can't lie to us. We see the facts that they're not going to cut Medicaid. But if they find money anywhere, it's going to be as a result of cutting very vulnerable programs, from healthcare to education to food nutrition programs to housing programs to public education, so that they can find billions of dollars to give to wealthy donors, wealthy businesses, and wealthy people who've been very supportive of this administration, including the owners of the Delaney Hall, who are a major contributor to Donald Trump. This is a corrupt administration. This is an administration that lies every day. This is an administration that is wreaking havoc in our communities, in our economy, and scaring the dickens out of people.
Mm. Congressmember Coleman is on a member of the House Budget and Appropriations Committee. Before you go, we spoke to you earlier this year when you attended President Trump's address to Congress with a guest, Dr. Adam Hamawi, a reconstructive surgeon and Army veteran who'd recently volunteered in Gaza, also provided life-saving care to now Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois when she was wounded in the Iraq War in 2004, had her legs blown off. President Trump didn't address the devastation in Gaza during his address, but promised to bring peace and prosperity to the region. In a moment, we're going to go to a Palestinian accidental war correspondent from Gaza, suffered from malnutrition. Ireland just gave him a scholarship. We'll speak to him in Dublin. But I'm wondering your thoughts as the new pope, Pope Leo XIV, just called for a ceasefire in Gaza. And the what President Trump has talked about will happen to Gaza and his support for Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel.
Well, let me say that if the president gets his way with Gaza, it'll become some high-level spa for people to come, and it will displace all of the people who have a right to live there. And Netanyahu is continuing this war because, just like the president, he has a very corrupt environment. He has to face the courts at some point, but if he keeps the war going, then he's not going to have to face the courts and then be answerable for his corruption. We need to understand the inhumane conditions in Gaza. We need to understand that there needs to be a ceasefire. There needs to be a rebuilding. There needs to be the opportunity for Palestinians and Israelis to live side by side in safety, security, and prosperity. And we need to teach the younger generations of Palestinians and Israelis not to hate one another because they look different or because they pray differently. It is inhumane what we've seen with the devastation of Gaza. 75 to 80% of the infrastructure is gone. Dr. Hamaway has lost colleagues that he worked with in the hospitals who are trying to bring healthcare and life safety services to those people under these conditions. He is an amazing human being. We must end this war. The United States of America cannot continue to weaponize Israel against Gaza. We need to bring the hostages home. Of course, we need to eliminate the threat of Hamas, but we need to do that without trying to displace all of the Palestinians, the innocent children, elderly people, men and women who simply want to live in peace and have prosperity.
New Jersey Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman, I want to thank you for being with us. When we come back, we go to Dublin, Ireland, to speak with Aboubakar Abed, the 22-year-old Palestinian accidental war correspondent. We last spoke to him in Gaza, suffering from malnutrition. He's now in Ireland with a scholarship to study as he heals. Stay with us. In our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As Israel's total blockade on Gaza is now in its 71st day, a widely used global hunger tracking tool warns Gaza's entire population is at critical risk of famine. 500,000 of those are now facing starvation. The group Save the Children warned today that nearly all Gaza's children, some 930,000 children, are at risk of famine. Gaza's hospitals remain overwhelmed amidst Israel's relentless bombardment and are in urgent need of critical supplies. Israel killed at least 17 Palestinians at a school-turned-shelter today, including at least five children. Meanwhile, Hamas is expected to imminently release the last U.S. hostage, the American-Israeli soldier Edan Alexander, after engaging in talks with the Trump administration and what analysts say could lead to a new ceasefire after Israel unilaterally shattered an earlier ceasefire in March. This all comes as a U.N. special committee warned Israel appears poised to enact another Nakba, referring to the mass expulsion of Palestinians in 1948 when Israel was created. The committee said, quote, Israel continues to inflict unimaginable suffering on the people living under its occupation whilst rapidly expanding confiscation of land as part of its wider colonial aspirations, unquote. We're going to turn right now. We were hoping to turn to Aboubakar Abed, who is a young Palestinian journalist in Gaza, did not plan to be covering war, calls himself an accidental war correspondent, was suffering malnutrition, was able to get out and went to Ireland. But we seem to have lost connection with him. While we see what happens with that, we want to turn right now to Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress. Last weekend, she attended the largest ever national member meeting of the organization Jewish Voice for Peace. More than 2,000 people attended. Democratic Congress member Rashida Tlaib thanked them and addressed the conference. This is a part of her remarks.
I was born and raised in the most beautiful, blackest city in the country, where every corner is a reminder of movement work. I'm also a proud eldest daughter of 14. Yes, Palestinians have lots of babies. And, of course, my two Palestinian parents, my mother, who grew up in the West Bank, and my father in a little village outside of Jerusalem. But today I want to talk a little bit about addiction, our country's addiction to war, our country addicted to extraction, to death. You know, the president of the United States currently has requested $1 trillion military budget, the largest military budget in the history of our nation. But the Pentagon can't even pass an audit, y'all. 7 audits in a row. When folks in town halls in my community ask me, you know, well, talk about efficiency and waste, I was like, they need to start with the Pentagon. And people just scream. And they said, absolutely. You know, we already know, and I know all of you have heard Dr. King say that a nation continues year after year spending more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. We've all heard that. You know, why is it that our government always has enough money for bombs and bombing people to kill people, but never seems to have money to provide people with health care, with housing, enough food for their families? I tell my colleagues all the time, I got schools in my community with garbage bags over their drinking fountain. You know, I always remember hearing Shirley Chisholm talk about, the first black woman ever elected to Congress, talk about children can't learn if they're hungry. Well, children can't learn if they're being poisoned, not only by the water, but the dirty air. You know, people in our country every single day are dying because they can't afford health care. That's why you hear people say, we don't have health care, but we have sick care in our country. More than 60,000 of our neighbors in our country die because they can't afford to see a doctor. So I'm sick and tired of them saying we don't have money for resources here at home. And it's a policy choice, we all know this. But I say this because right now they are cutting Medicaid, which is a band-aid to sick care right now. And, you know, coming here from the Hill, watching them claim that they're not doing it. Gaslighting. It reminded me them of gaslighting the American people. We're not supporting genocide. We must continue to come together and choose our communities over wars and genocide. You know, and I don't know why it continues to be controversial to say we must stop bombing people. I still remember in the early days of the genocide, we couldn't even say ceasefire. So to say I don't want our tax dollars used to dismember children or stop killing them, that should not be controversial. When I got elected in 2018 and sworn in 2019, I remember talking to my cousin who lives in Ramallah, and she told me, you know, it was this moment that we had, you know, I'm the older one, and she's, I always see her still like she's 11, 12. She's in her 30s, has twin boy and a girl. And she just very like quietly says, we thought they just wanted us all to die. And I was like, who? America. Until you got elected. And I was like, what? She goes, Rashida, you don't understand. We're like, well, they elected Rashida. They must not want us all to die. No, it's so sad, though, because she said it was, she was saying it in Arabic to me. And I said, no. I said, you should come meet JVP Detroit. I told her, cuz, oh my God, you gotta meet, because before I met all of y'all, rest of the JVP family, I had JVP Detroit. Now, JVP Detroit, Jewish Voice for Peace in Detroit, you don't understand. It was before the genocide. They were in a line trying to prevent shutoffs of water. They were on the line saying, we're not going to allow you to build a stadium while taking money from school. So they've been on the front line to speak truth to power consistently. I mean, they experienced doxing before doxing was even a thing. And I tell her, you don't understand. You have to come and see this incredible community in Detroit that says save lives. Palestinians deserve to live. Palestinian children deserve to grow old. I wish, Shireen, you could see it. But they don't get to always see it. You know, I know that many of you understand our shared humanity. That's why you're here. That's why you're part of this movement. But in, especially in the face of dehumanizing the, you know, how do I say, violence and the despair, we know that every life is sacred, no matter somebody's ethnic background or faith. And we must work together for freedom and safety for all, and real, true, peaceful existence, coexistence for every faith. I still remember my CD telling me the story of picking olives next to his Jewish neighbor. That's what I want. I don't want somebody being othered or seen as less than solely because they were born Palestinian. So I'm grateful for all of your voices in this movement. We know that many, many people around the world are with us, committed to ending the genocide in Gaza, apartheid in all parts of occupied Palestine, and recognizing humanity in every person.
That's Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of Michigan addressing the Jewish Voice for Peace National meeting in Baltimore. Over 2,000 people attended. That does it for our show. As we end the program, 20 years ago this month, Democracy Now! Published the first audio edition of our headlines in Spanish, Democracy Now! In Español. Those headlines are broadcast by hundreds of stations from the Americas to Europe and available as a podcast to this day. Today, we also translate our segment summaries, select transcripts, weekly column into Spanish, and produce Spanish language interviews. A huge shout out to our current Democracy Now! In Español team, Clara Ibarra, Igor Moreno, Ivan Incapié, and to Andrea Grace Canteras, who worked with us to launch Democracy Now! In Español 20 years ago. Special thanks to Maria Eva Blata, Veronica Gelman, Chuck Skurich. We hope you feel better, and all the interns who've contributed over the two decades. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week, I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Burnaby, Le Chablis.